The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. This is episode 800 and who cares? I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Jada Griffin, Brian Altano, and very, very tired from parenting, but also reviewing Stellar Blade, Mitchell Saltzman. What's up, everybody? Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond. I think we're 8:45 this week, which is probably a little bit later than Mitchell woke up this morning.
That's I would say so. Yeah.
Everything's a blur. Yeah.
No, we're high enough into the numbers where I think we should just replace the numbers with like Origins, Ragnarok, you know, Valhalla, stuff like that. But anyway, Stellar Blade is out later this week. We have a review up on IGN.com and the various IGN tendrils. Mitchell, you enjoyed this game. You gave it a 7 out of 10, which means you thought it was good. You enjoyed a lot of it. You had some criticisms of it, but for the most part, it sounds like it is a damn fun action game. Tell us about it.
That is a very good way to put it. It is a damn fun action game. I think if you judge it purely on the merits of just being an action game, it's actually pretty great. If you just focus on the combat, you focus on how that combat evolves as the game goes on, you know, the enemy variety, all the things that I'm looking for in an action game, Stellar Blade has it. The thing is that Stellar Blade is not a pure action game. There's also a lot of RPG elements, and those RPG elements are not so good. This is a game that cares a lot about its story. There's a lot of long cutscenes. You're constantly going back to like this main hub, talking to like this, you know, the main Oracle guy and getting all this lore and background. It's not terribly engaging, mainly because the characters aren't engaging. The characters are just nothing burgers, just a whole cast of nothing burgers. It's kind of a bummer because there's definitely some, you know, there's some Nier vibes to this game. And I think if you compare the two of them side by side, you could see just how good Yoko Taro is tackling very similar kind of themes in his games. I think ultimately what I want people to know is that 7 means good. I did enjoy this game. It is not, you know, I would still recommend this game to anyone who likes action games, anyone who likes, you know, the style of game. I had some pretty substantial issues with it. And I think the issues are pretty obvious.
And it's,
if you play it,
we talked about this kind of going into it, like ahead of time, there was a point where you were hovering around an 8. And then once you kind of digested it, there's some sort of, you know, structural backtracky things that stick out as being kind of a pain in the ass. We can come back to those. Let's talk about the sort of the action side of things. And really, like, this is, it's got some Sekiro to it. It's got some other stuff. What does it do really, really well? Because Mitchell, you're really good at action games. You understand the frames and the complex science of not getting hit by monsters. Where does this really shine?
I think it really shines in the fundamentals. It really takes what made Sekiro good in terms of like, it's a very defensive focused kind of action game where, you have to really pay attention to what the enemies are doing. And, you know, you gotta learn their, you actually have to really learn their attack patterns, because you basically have to parry, you know, so many hits of their long, long ass combos in order to find yourself an opportunity to counterattack. And that feels really satisfying. There's, you know, the sound effects are great. So there's a really nice clank, 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 clank whenever
I will say, you know, I almost entirely turn off all of the microphone functionality on my controller. I don't really need that anymore. That was fun when I got phone calls and No More Heroes on Wii 20 years ago or whatever. But with this game, I guess it defaulted on, and every time you parry, there is the most satisfying clang. And I loved it. And I was like, I actually turned it up. And that parry is so fundamental to the way you fight characters and enemies in this game. And it's so satisfying. I love the combat in this game so much that, like, every time that happened, especially in like a big intense boss fight where I wasn't sure how things were going to go, you can't really read their tells. I love that stuff. It was awesome, awesome, awesome.
I often found myself using the, because it's very rhythmic with their attack patterns. Mm-hmm. And so using that sound as an audio cue, I would like, it kind of helped me through the tougher fights where they are very parry heavy and enemies are throwing out like 8 attacks that you need to parry. Otherwise, they like recover their gauge. There's like certain fights that recover their parry gauge. And so like, having that musical rhythm is just like an extra layer to like kind of help me. Is like, okay, it's ting 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 ting, and it's like cool. And it's like, it's just great hearing being able to use that as an extra resource.
Yeah, yeah. But what I really like about it is that it's not just that. Also, they do a lot to really make that Sekiro framework, it's, you know, their own. They got, you know, these 4 burst skill or beta skills that you can use to kind of, you know, get an extra advantage. You have this triplet ability, which is really good at single target damage. You have slash, which covers a wide area. It's really satisfying when you're able to just, you know, take out like 4 enemies all at once with it. There's an armor breaker move, and there's a shockwave move that lets you basically attack enemies from a distance.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you also have a gun with various different types of ammo. You have this really great gap closer, and like your, I forgot what the name of it is, but like you can just instantly teleport to an enemy. You've got other things that
called rush, I think.
Yeah, rush.
It's like lightning rush or something like that.
I
used rush
a lot. I loved it. And then there's the aerial combat you unlock. That's the thing too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I think it started with sort of the basis of Sekiro. One of the things that kind of frustrated me about Sekiro is like you get a sword and you get really, really good with that sword, but then you also get some sort of like ninja arts, which are like supplementary weapons, right? And that's where a little bit more of the creativity comes involved. But with this game, like at one point you have like 6 or 7 different skill trees, and for the most part, dumping points into them like feels really good, and it has an almost immediate reaction. Like you're improving the timing, you're improving your power on specific moves and stuff like that. And I found myself like there's at one point you have like 5 or 6 different sort of meters that are kind of singing in synchronicity. And if you're doing a good job of being creative in your combat and your fights and using those meters to their extent and then draining them and then jumping over to the next one, like you find yourself doing a lot of really, really clever and really cool shit. And like, I constantly loved fighting enemies in this game. I was picking fights with everyone I saw. There are games like this where like you get 30 hours in and you like you just start running around people because you're like, it's not even worth it anymore. But like you could run up on people, kill them in one hit, or like jump off of them and like chain a bunch of moves where you sneak into an enemy and then sneak into 2 or 3 more. Like, man, all of that was like so fun. I loved it so much. I had so many of those, like, you know, this is not a, we'll talk about this too, but this is not a Souls game, right? This is not a Souls like. Like, I think that like there's a lot of misconceptions that it is because it's got big bosses and it's got checkpoints, lanterns, stuff like that. But like when you die, you don't lose all your stuff. You know, there isn't really like a level up system in the traditional self sense. With
there's
like
no risk reward.
Yeah. There's no real risk reward. But I did have a lot of those like moments that I have in Dark Souls and Bloodborne and Elden Ring where I'm like, I'm down to my last nothing and I'm pulling out all the stops, including, you know,
power-ups and projectiles and anything I could to take on some gigantic thing, and then killing him, and I'm my fingers are tense and my hands are sweaty, and I jump up for joy and I'm yelling, and like there was a bunch of those moments for that in this game for me. And yeah, that I didn't have any of that with the story. But
something I dig about it is you have a lot of gadgets. Like I feel like Sekiro was, when it got down to it, it was kind of bare bones in terms of like how much stuff you had. In this case, you have like four or five different kinds of grenades. You also have like a gun, which is not really the game's strong suit, but it still feels good and it's still fun. And it's like, that's, you know, you can do a little bit of damage that way if you're really up against the ropes. But like the thing that's neat is, and the thing that does separate this, I know a lot of people did bounce off of Sekiro because it is extremely hard. It's pretty much just, I would say that is FromSoft's get goodest of games, you know, like that is very much the one where it's like, you know, this one you can go grind. Like if you're stuck, you can go just kill a bunch of enemies and unlock some skill points. And like, and it's, I mean, I guess you could do that in Sekiro, but in this case, it's like you have a considerably broader amount of skill trees where there's more stuff you can unlock. You can, you know, upgrade your numerous abilities. It just feels like, and yeah, you're like constantly filling up little meters. There's a very good sense of just a good steady drip feed of like, you know, dopamines just being like, ooh, I'm getting this thing, I'm getting that thing. And it's, it's a good time. It's generous.
I think the big thing with like Sekiro is like, it takes a lot longer to build up those skill points than it does in Stellar Blade. And Stellar Blade, you're constantly filling up your EXP gauge to get that next skill point. Turning in side quests, as bad as they are worthwhile because they sometimes give you 1 to 2 levels worth of experience. And I think the other thing where it like is comparable to Sekiro is you can't button mash in Stellar Blade. If you button mash, you'll find yourself just leaving yourself wide open because some of her combos leave you very vulnerable at the end. And if you're button mashing and you don't finish the enemy or eat away all of their shield gauge to where it staggers them for a split second, like you're leaving yourself wide open for a counterattack. And
they tell you they show you instantly too. Cause like when you miss like a big move or a big cue, like a, you know, 40-foot tall beast will pick you up by the throat and slam you down on the ground. And you're like, man, oh, I felt that. Like, you know, your hand, your controller's rumbling and you're like, okay, that I screwed that up. Sorry.
It's not even like the biggest beasts that do. There's like the little ones that are like hiding in the like the statues, and they pick you up. And like, I don't know if the rest of you experienced this, but I feel like every time I got hit by that like move, if I got grabbed, it held her up to the camera with her butt front and center. Like, it's like, I was like, they knew what they were doing here
with this. Of course,
like,
There's like, plenty of moments where they know what they were doing. They know exactly what they were doing. Like the slide back, like with your, you know, tripod stance.
And it's you know, it's great. I'm all for it. Have fun. I think that like what Eve makes up for in like complete, not even like a lack of personality, like it is almost, she's almost entirely monotone emotionally for almost the entire game, to the point where it's like, it is next to impossible to care about her or the people around her. But when she's in combat, when she's running around, like everything is so stylish and over the top that it's like really fun. We were just talking yesterday in our meeting about this episode about how cool it is how this game handles ladders. Like if you jump in a ladder the wrong way, she'll grab onto it, spin around, and then slide up. There's like quick slides down. There's like, you get double jumps and stuff like that. Which, speaking of which, like every now and then this game is like, we're a platforming game, and you're like, nah, you're not.
No, you're not.
You're not that great at that. don't do that too much.
This game, it does its homework. It eats its vegetables. It does the thing it sets out to be, where it's like a hack and slash action game. I would say it succeeds with flying colors.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then it overextends itself trying to do a few other things that it doesn't quite stick the landing on. Yeah. Stick the landing quite literally in the platforming department, which is one of its worst parts.
which is kind of frustrating. And it's weird because some of those lead to like instant fail sequences, which the game doesn't necessarily telegraph are happening to you until you're in them. Like there's a bunch of like sort of stealth, but sort of like, you know, like, hey, there's a sequence you have to go through. And if a thing touches you, you die instantly. and it'll bring you back to here. And the checkpointing can be a little frustrating with those kind of things. And yeah, you can get good and all that, but like sometimes the camera doesn't really allow you the freedom to do that, or it just sort of bottlenecks you into an area that's a little frustrating. I've been sort of describing this as the way like Assassin's Creed 1 and Watch Dogs 1 felt, where like I know this, I hope that this is the beginning of a really awesome franchise that goes on for years and years and years. And right now, like, it shows all of the, like, the promise of something like that. But the first one's got just enough kind of annoyances around the edges that I think, I guarantee you, if you're very excited for this game, you're going to play a bunch of it, you're going to love a bunch of it, something about it will frustrate you by the 20-30 hour mark. It just will. There's like one major, not even just like a moment, but like one major feature in it, or one of the aspects in the way it handles like certain things is gonna annoy you, and you're gonna wish it was a little bit better. But like I think this is the start of something awesome and big and new.
I don't know if you guys remember Kena, that game that came out
about
a couple years ago, but it was very similar kind of thing, where like the first game that they came out with had some problems, but there's like a nugget of potential that I think could grow into something really, really special. And I feel the same way about Stellar Blade. I think if they look back at this game and focus on what they did right, and either stray away from the things that they did wrong or look to improve the things that they did wrong, I think this could be a very special series.
The costumes in this game are really interesting, because like a lot of them, obviously, like they're over the top sexy and stuff like that. Nothing wrong with that, all for it. But there's also some like really cool sort of cosplay opportunities in here. Jada and I had just sort of independently realized that we had both been wearing this one that looked like Ada Wong in Resident Evil 4, one of my favorite games of all time, and put it on right. It's like a red and black basically, and put it on right before this sequence. And I don't want to spoil it, but it's like, there's a sort of survival horror inspired sequence in the game, and playing through that section with that costume, I was like, oh, this rules. Like, and that was sort of just like accidentally, like depending on which environment you're in, you can put on different costumes, and none of them have any sort of attribute change, which is sort of interesting about this. There's been a lot of discussion about the look of the main character of this game. I actually thought that her costumes would have more of a function in terms of like stat increases and stuff like that, but I guess they went with like a purely cosmetic thing. Even like you like there's a this special edition of this game, the $10 extra version or whatever, comes with like earrings, and they're it's just for dress up. Like literally there's no stat boost at all. Same with her haircuts and stuff like that. Like you meet a character who at one point's like, go out in the desert and help me find my my scissors so I can open my hair salon, because your hair has lots of volume and it shows potential, but it's just not there what it needs to be yet. And it's like very funny, because like you're just like, am I playing Barbies? I think I'm playing Barbies.
I loved the costume customization in this game. I probably swapped it up if it wasn't every like 2 to 3 hours. And I put about 50 hours in my first playthrough with finding, I think, 95% of everything. I found myself changing every 3 to 4 hours for 2, 3, 4 hours, or between like major story beats. So like every story beat, like it was, my character looked completely different. And honestly, I think the outfits that like we got to see in trailers and teasers and previews, I think they're her worst outfits compared to like the bunch of the ones you get later. Like, yes, they're very shiny and they're very, you know, kind of revealing and stuff like that, but I think they're her worst outfits personally. I'm very excited to see what other outfits other people kind of gravitate towards. There's also a pretty dumb one that we all loved on staff.
We're
really hoping, really hoping that Mitchell's review would have just been all of that one, because it would have just been hilarious.
I don't want to spoil it at all, but I will say it is the opposite of revealing.
I know which one you're talking about.
I won't say
it is in the review.
Okay, cool.
Nice. All
right, I would say that there are people out there who may find it sexually provocative, but that's an edge case.
There are some.
And they might have conventions. I guess like we should, I do want to talk a little bit about the fact that like it was, getting around this game is kind of a pain in the ass. Like, unlocking stuff was so much fun that it was frustrating that it was difficult to do more of that. Like there was, there's no true new game plus. There's like a pretty significant point of no return with like many hours left in the game when you're in the middle of like a bunch of side missions and stuff like that. There's like fast traveling from area to area is like just extremely cumbersome. It doesn't doing side missions and finding out which of the areas you need to go to within specific areas to find the side mission that you're doing is just frustrating. Some areas have maps entirely. Like there are two pretty massive open world, fairly barren kind of areas that have maps. They kind of need them because they're just gigantic. But then really nothing else in the game does. And so it's just a little odd, like the decisions behind some of that. Like that's what we were messaging each other, sort of being like, man, it's like so frustrating to just go from point A to point B in a game that's like constantly nudging you to go explore and do side content. And like, there's like there's a fishing mini game in this. There's a whole fishing side quest. And like that, one of the elements of it had popped up over like very near the end of the game. So like my main objective was like kill the main boss in space. And my sub objective was like, you know, catch a blowfish or whatever. And I couldn't, like there was no water there to go fishing anywhere. And I'm like, and I couldn't go back and do anything about it. And I was just like, let me out of here. Like you put me on this, you put me on rails for like 3 hours straight. And it's great. It's fun. It's cool. I love the combat and stuff like that. But like, let me go back to town and like do cool stuff and get more costumes. And like,
that was one of our big notes, Mitchell. You put this in the review. You said there wasn't enough water, which is a major no-no. You know?
But, oh God.
No, I'm kidding. But no, like I think the
Goldilocks over here.
To your point, like if this had been like a straightforward kind of old school action game, which in a lot of ways it's kind of drawing on that stuff, it might have been better, but I think people also would have been griping about having not enough content. You know, like it is a substantial game. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of stuff to do, but it does suffer from that sort of, it's like, it's not designed to be backtracked in. Like it's, if you're kind of taking a straight shot through it, like if these were areas were broken up as levels, it might be sort of different, but the fact that you have to walk from one to the other, or, you know, you use like payphones, which to fast travel, which is.
Well, yeah. So to give you an example of how that's frustrating is there are checkpoints constantly all over the game, right? They're everywhere. And some of those checkpoints have a payphone and what looks like a rock tumbler where you can basically like upgrade your character stats and stuff like that. And then some of them just have like a chair and like a vending machine and like a pot of stew or whatever, and a radio. And yeah, with that, you can like change your songs and blah, 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 blah. There's a main town in the game that sort of operates, not necessarily as a hub, but like you're back there often, right? And within that town is a job board, and then also a bunch of characters who give you side missions that don't necessarily appear on the job board. So there's a little bit of like left hand, not really talking to the right hand on that one, where you've got a list of missions in your UI, which, by the way, I think has a very good UI, this game. And then there's a job board inside this city. And those things don't necessarily communicate super well. And so you'll have to go from like the city, which is adjacent to this massive wasteland area. And you can't jump directly from the city to the wasteland. You have to go from the city to the edge of the wasteland and then walk into the wasteland, which initiates like a new load. So you're basically like, to fast travel, you have to travel twice. And then when you complete that mission, you got to do that same thing again to go back to the character who gives you a reward. And a lot of times that reward is like 5,000 gold, which you just get. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like I had more than enough money in this game.
Too much gold.
Yeah, just too much gold.
I talk about this in the review. Gold is a worthless currency in this game.
Yeah. So that's the other thing that's kind of annoying. I had so much gold that there's a character that sells you effectively like raw materials that you can use to buy suits and upgrade stuff. And those are slightly in shorter supply. But with gold being so plentiful, you use all the gold to get all the raw materials, which means that in the back half of the game, all of the treasure chests, which you're going out of your way to unlock and find, are full of raw materials that you're probably good on because you used all the gold to buy them. And so, there's a lot of games try this thing where they're juggling three or four different economies and currencies and stuff like that. This one, thankfully, is not none of them are tied to real money. Like the developers have always been like, hey, we're going to give you tons of free stuff with the DLC and all that. I think that's awesome. Like they've been super cool and transparent about that. But in the current version of the game, like it's almost impossible not to have enough for everything, which means you spend the last 5 or 6 hours opening up a bunch of treasure chests and getting stuff that you don't really need. But
that could have been streamlined by just you found a costume. Yeah. You didn't find schematics for a costume and then resources to craft the costume. You just found the costume.
And occasionally you do find those which are pretty cool. I'd always made me really happy when I found a costume in this game. Because unlike something like this, you know, the first Star Wars Jedi game where you just found ponchos, like in this game, it's like every time you get a costume, you're like, I don't know what it's going to be. Like it could be, you know, full on head to toe secret agent jeans with a bomber jacket or something. Or it's like, you know, I'm going into space in a bikini. Like this is going to be secret fun agent
jeans. They fully change Eve's vibe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say secret agent jeans are like the kind of stuff that Elizabeth Hurley wears in Austin Powers, you know, like a full on tight.
It's like a leather jumpsuit that isn't jeans. What?
No, it's like a mix of jean and jumpsuit.
You know who had secret agent jeans was Solid Snake. Anyway.
So I will clarify on a few things Brian said, like fast traveling. Yes, very cumbersome. But there are a few spots where like if you're in town, there's like a door icon on the map. You mm-hmm. can fast travel to that and that will take you into the next zone directly and vice versa from that wasteland area. And then there is one sort of resource that is like you'll want to kind of look out for, which is like any of the robot parts, which you get from just killing the various robot enemies, but there's a special shop you can unlock and that shop sells like upgrades for your character, so you can add extra attachments and other types of drone upgrades and things like that, or just power upgrades for your weapon. Mm-hmm. So you'll definitely like want to look for that type of stuff. But the problem is you never know what you're looking for when you get to a chest. You never know what's going to be into it. And yes, that's part of like, it's like, oh, what's in this treasure chest? But the problem is it doesn't often respect your time, and where sometimes you like some of the chests that are the most off the beaten path, or you have to go do a bunch of things, it's just gold or it's ammo. Maybe it's ammo. Yeah.
That frustrated me a lot. We were just talking about this before about how like you'll open up a treasure chest that's just on the golden path and you'll get the same reward as something you'll get if you go 15 minutes out of your way and do this whole frustrating mm-hmm. platforming sequence, and you open that up and you're like, oh man, like that wasn't worth it. Like I'm glad I came down here and I'm glad I got through it. But I'll also say too, like the puzzles in this game are Fisher Price shit. Like it is like there's a lot of very baby mode, like follow the blinking line before the light shuts off. Like it's mm-hmm. fine. Like there's some padding here and there, but like it's just very odd the way there's a couple of things in there that like I just hope in the sequel they're like, we don't even need to do puzzles in this game.
It's funny because like the combat is like tight and it's unforgiving and it's like very clearly this is the meat and potatoes. And then you also have these puzzles where like you're like Adam, your little drone accomplice, you'll like walk into a room and it's like Atreus being like, looks like we have to move the water and move that elevator. Anyway, head up that ladder. And it's like,
I climb up the yellow gamer paint wall and you'll see exactly mm-hmm. where you need to go. There's
go
so
towards
much gamer
the large
paint
blinking light oh, that yeah. you need to if, go towards. Like, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
If Did it, you like the puzzles, anybody, Mitchell?
Well, what I was going to say about the puzzles, and I think that this is a credit to Shift Up, they don't repeat any of the puzzles. And there's mm-hmm. so there's a ton of different types of puzzles. You have one that's like the BioShock hacking minigame. You have one that's, you know, a number logic puzzle. There's another one. It all kind of ties into this thing that I think the game does really well, where it mixes things up very good. You know, one second you're doing a, you know, standard linear kind of level, you know, a combat level. And then the next you're in a larger open world that's more focused on exploration and discovery. Mm-hmm. The next you're going down into that lab for that that part you mentioned earlier with like Resident Evil, where, you know, I again don't want to spoil it too much. And then there's like, you know, in the middle of that, there's like this jumping puzzle, which again, jumping puzzles are not great, but I appreciate that they are so willing to go to give so many different looks and not just like focus in on like three different puzzle types and then just, you know, make them each more difficult as the game goes on.
No, you're 100% correct. Like I will say like it falters in a lot of those departments, but the fact that they were ambitious enough to even like bite off more than they can chew is really cool for like a a first game in a franchise, because I think a lot of times you get a game where they're just like, we have a mechanic and we have a story, we have a character and we have a world. And then by like hour 20, you're like, I've seen it all. There's nothing left to do here. Whereas this one, like, they were introducing new puzzle ideas and unlockables and mechanics 30 hours in. And I was like, all right. I mean, I don't know if now's the time to do that, but go for it. I support your vision quest.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For me, the puzzles were fine. They were pretty inoffensive. And like I said, I appreciate that they were kind of taking a shotgun approach rather than, you know, just focusing on a few handful of puzzles that ultimately you get tired of, you know, the third time you do it. And there's like, you know, 8 more that you have to do.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's not a puzzle game. Like, that's
right.
Pretty clear going in. I don't think anyone was expecting that. But it's the kind of thing where, like, it has, for the most part, a really clear idea of what it's here to do. And it does a good job at doing that. And then it extends itself to try some other stuff. And in some places, it's more successful than others. One thing worth noting is it has difficulty options, which is always a sort of contentious concept in the world of video games, especially tight action games. There's an interesting thing with combat. It shows you button cues instead of like it effectively turns, you know, combat into really, really fast quick time events rather than just have it be, you know, reading animations, which is, I think, an interesting solve that, like, I feel like that could work in a FromSoft game too, without pissing everyone off.
Wait. So like the, whatever the story difficulty is or whatever, when you're in combat, it just shows like a button prompt.
It pops up. So like, it's, you know, it varies. So it'll be like, you know, it'll show L1 when you've got a block, or it'll show like circle if you've got a dodge, or if you've got a blink, it'll be, you know,
the direction
circle plus circle. And it's interesting because it feels like it's not sometimes it's not obvious, or sometimes maybe if you're just in the wrong place or something, but it's, I don't know. It's not just completely like total baby mode. Like it's,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's
to kind of clarify. And this also kind of goes into another element of the combat that I think is really good. There are certain attacks in Stellar Blade that are unblockable, and they're color coordinated. So yellow attack is just straight up unblockable. You have to dodge out of the way of it. Blue, you have to dodge towards the enemy to get behind them. It's called a blink. And then there's a repulse where you have a purple flash. And for that, you have to dodge backwards, basically. And if you're playing in story mode, when you have one of those big attacks, it will slow the game down. It will basically bring up like a QTE event kind of thing where it'll tell you the proper course of action to take to avoid it. And it'll give you some time to you know, input it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm always a big fan of different difficulty modes, and I'm especially a fan mm-hmm. of different difficulty modes that are not just tweaking the numbers of damage that you do. Or the damage that you take. So I think it's great. I actually think that the hard difficulty mode is pretty disappointing in comparison, because yeah. that is literally just you take more damage, you deal less damage.
Mm.
Yep. Yeah. I think I'm about halfway through on my hard mode playthrough, and I'm just like, oh, this is just they're just, you know, damage sponges now at this point. Like yeah.
How would you change that? What's the alternative, I guess?
I would have it be New Game Plus.
yeah, okay, fair enough.
Well, I think New Game Plus is super frustrating here.
So I think the maybe not the easiest solve for like a hard difficulty that unlocks is adding new attack animations, adding new events that happen, like say in boss fights, like, oh hey, in hard mode, there's like mines scattered across the floor now. So you have to watch where you move. You have to like, you can use them to your advantage to lure the boss into to do damage. Like adding these different elements and caveats to it that increase the difficulty without just adding HP and just adding stats to characters.
Yeah.
I think that is the way to go. Like I've been playing a lot of Hades lately. And I'm like doing the Pact Punishment where you can add things. And one of their New Game Plus options is it adds a new attack to each of the bosses when you add it in there. So like it's something new that you have to learn and prepare for, and it keeps the gameplay fresh. And Hades is something you play, you know, I'm endlessly. 30 runs into a brand new save file, and it still feels fresh every time. Whereas like Stellar Blade now, I'm 20 hours into my second playthrough, and I'm just like, well, I know what I have to do here. I just have to do more of it. And it's just like, I don't want that. That's like not enjoyable experience.
The developers said that New Game Plus is coming. I feel like it's a running theme now, and I understand game development is expensive and difficult, but it feels like it more often than not now, New Game Plus is way too late for me. It's like I've already, you know, mm-hmm. kind of moved on to the next couple of things. I would have loved when I rolled credits to just sort of be like, hey, you have this and this now. You get a brand new costume and you get to start from the beginning, but with all your skill trees unlocked, and you can play on hard if you want. Like there's, you know, that's one of my favorite things that Resident Evil 4 does. It's just, and it did that in 2004. It was immediately rewarded you with incentive to start a second playthrough, which I would have done in a heartbeat. And like Jada, you platinum games, and like, this is going to be kind of a frustrating one to platinum, specifically because there's like these soda cans hidden all over the game, which are very fun to collect, but also like it's easy to miss them on a playthrough. And once you get bottlenecked into like point of no return sections in this game, then with no New Game Plus, you'll have to collect all of them all over again.
Yep, and that's what I'm doing right now, my second playthrough, because I found, I think, 45 of the 49 on my first playthrough. And they do this kind of boy cries wolf kind of thing where they're like, hey, point of no return. And then you have like 5 hours, and then you actually, surprise, surprise, it's not. You can actually go back and explore a little bit more after a certain point. But then they do it again, and it doesn't give you as like blatant a warning that you're locked in after going to this last zone. Mm-hmm. And then you are actually just locked in this last zone, and you can't change or do anything or go back. And I felt really bad because I had just finished like all the fishing side quests the night before, and I woke up and I was like, okay, let's go finish the game. And I forgot to go turn in all my fish I caught to get the last like fishing outfit And now I have to play through the whole game and do the whole fishing side quest again to get that.
Which is like, funny because canonically it just means she brought like 100 fish in a space to find the fight the final boss. And, you know, they're like in
her underwear.
It's a weird situation there. No, I mean, that's again, this is stuff that could get patched. Like, we know a new game plus is coming. This is such a weird time for games because, you know, again, stuff gets reviewed based on what is available at launch. Like, that's what what's being looked at. And a bunch is going to change. Like, a bunch of stuff is going to go. They're going to go in and they're going to make tweaks and things. They're probably going to add a bunch of costumes. They haven't done like, oh, here's like our, you know, DLC roadmap or anything. But to come out and be like, yeah, we're going to have some more costumes. They're going to be free. And also there's going to be a new game plus. That's something to look forward to. It's just frustrating that like there's not, you know, the alternative to like a new game plus is just you beat the game and it spits you out. What, like right before the final boss and you still have all your crap. Everything's the same. Mm-hmm. You can go explore the game and do, you know, side quests and all that.
I would like that.
Yeah, there's so many games that do like, oh, would you like to go back in time before the final decision so you can
need to say go back in time. Like, I feel like there's an excuse in the story where it's like for narrative reasons, once it's over, it's over. But it's like you went to space with fish in your underpants. Like, you don't need to, like, this is not a game about realism. Just be like, it's fine. The world is safe and go collect soda cans. Go.
I loved about, like, you know, big open world games like Tears of the Kingdom is like I rolled credits, but I was like, there's so much I still want to do. And the game just spits you back out to right before you fight Ganon. So you can go do all the side stuff. And like, that's the kind of stuff I'm hoping for in their roadmap here. Cause like, you know, if New Game Plus is going to take X amount of months to get together, if you look at something like, you know, Ragnarok and Spider-Man 2, like those things took a long time to get New Game Plus. And by the time they came around, I had moved on. But it would be cool to have like an option right now to like load the last area before the point of no return and go back and clean up all the side missions and get the soda cans and costumes and all that. Cause like,
yeah, it's
want to do that stuff.
The Yakuza games have like premium adventure, which I feel like sounds way fancier than it is because it's just like, yeah, here's what you were doing already, but you can level select or whatever and put on a gold suit. I'm excited to see this. I guess I'm guessing the logic behind not having a new game plus at launch is, they probably have numbers that suggest not that many people finish the entire game. You know, that's probably people who actually beat the game are in the minority, sadly, as we've seen with, I don't know.
Lots of games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then it also, you know, it takes time to beat the game and there's some lead time there. You know, it's not like they forgot to put a tutorial in. It's the thing that happens 30 hours in that you then have to deal with. So, you know, it's on the way. Mitchell, you were hovering around an 8 initially and thought about it. And like a lot of the stuff that seemed like a hang up that could be fixed in a patch, which is weird to think about, but
there's a lot that I think it almost feels like oversights. I think one of the big things that, well, I didn't really get to bring it up, but while we were talking about fast travel, there is a thing where after you complete a side quest you get a pop-up that says, would you like to return to the bulletin board or the client who gave you a side quest? Mm-hmm. And that, like, yeah, that's great. Okay, great. You press a button, you go right to them. But sometimes you don't want to do that because you want to, like, you know, continue
finish
forward.
Finish all of them in one area.
Yeah, you want to knock them out one by one by one.
Yeah.
And what kills me is that there's not just an ability to press start and go down and do the menu and say, return to Zion.
Thank you.
Return
oh my
to
God.
Bulletin board. Like, if you're already giving me the option to fast travel back to a spot, why not just give me that option all the time? Why only keep it when I satisfy a certain condition?
Yeah, because there'll be times where you travel to a region, you do a side quest, but then there's like two or three more that are in that region. And I would travel based on that, right? It's like the way you run errands. Like, I'm like, Whole Foods is next to Target, so I'll knock those two out side by side, right? With this, I was just like, okay, cool. I'm going to do this one, and this one. And then like the second one, it's like, hey, do you want to travel back? And you're like, no, not yet. And then the third one, you're like, oh, but there's still some more stuff I want to do here. And then you have to manually run all the way back to the checkpoint that has the payphone and then travel from there. Which is just like all these, yeah, it's just unnecessary, you know, like, so that's one of those things. I hope that they throw it in there down the line and you can just hit a button and go where you want to go.
What's the situation with load times in this? Because
I don't recall any.
I mean, is there, do you get like, the fact that I have to ask says a lot that it's not a big deal, but like, I, I don't recall crawling through any cracks, but there are doors that take a minute to load. There's some long hallways. I think a lot of them are kind of hidden back there. And it's, I imagine maybe there's some reasoning behind that, but I think the most egregious thing is the cutscenes are unskippable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's especially egregious when they're unskippable on your second playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no reason for, an unlockable difficulty mode to not have skippable cutscenes.
I know.
Our Lord and Savior 2024.
To be fair, like, they are skippable after you've seen them once. So like if you're fighting a boss and you've seen the cutscene, then you can skip the cutscene.
Yep.
But
if you die
on a new playthrough, you cannot skip any cutscene that you're seeing for the first time, but for the second time.
Yeah. The new playthrough treats that as like, hey, you just bought the game. Cool. Thanks. But you're playing on a difficulty you unlock by beating. Yeah. It's confusing.
It feels like an oversight. There's a lot of things in this game that just feel like oversights. And I think that's probably from, you know, maybe inexperience of, you know, this maybe being their first console game. Mm-hmm. I definitely think, for the most part, it's actually very impressive what they've accomplished with this game. But
absolutely,
there's definitely room for some quality of life improvements.
I had one crash the whole game, and
I haven't had any actually.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't either.
Literally one, and it was like, for the amount of stuff that this game throws at you, and how fast you're moving, and how fast paced the combat is, and how stylish everything is, and how good everything looks, I was just like kind of floored. Because I mean, when I was playing Spider-Man 2, like that's an extremely good looking game that's very quick moving, and that game like hard crashed on me like 8 times. And this game, like, there were all these times where I'm like, damn, are you all right in there? Like you're cooking. Like I cannot believe how much crap was getting thrown at me at the same time. How fast everything I was moving. How many like combat sequences I would go through back to back, and then jumping off of this thing onto that thing, dive into some guy's head and slice him open, and like it was just running great. And that said too, like I think the graphics are gorgeous in this game. Mm-hmm. I think some of the sort of like generic post-apocalyptic environments are kind of uninspired or whatever, but there's some like really awesome stuff it does with like stark minimalist space shit that's like really, really cool. There's some like really inspired shit in the back half that I really dug when it's doing like your typical kind of like the fall of man post-apocalyptic city stuff. I'm like, yeah, I've been there, done that. But like it does some really cool stuff later on in the game.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the fact that the cutscenes aren't skippable, and the fact that there is a mode called story mode, is sort of flies in the face of the fact that this isn't like a story-centric game. There's a story here, but it's definitely not the strong suit. It's it's there. There's something there. You open your review by mentioning this. The director says that he's a visualist, not a storyteller, which is I appreciate that sort of that transparency and that openness, and it's, but at the same time, I don't know. I was definitely rolling my eyes at some of the dialogue and some of the story beats. It feels like just kind of a handful of like names from the Matrix and like, you know, visuals borrowed from like Battle Angel Alita. And there's a, you know, you're in a post-apocalyptic desert thing full of,
I mean, there's a character named Orkel. Not Oracle.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're in the running for, I think, in the lead for like dumbest named characters in a game, between like somebody, I think there's somebody named Man and then somebody named Oracle. And like it's just,
yeah, there's a guy named Man.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so wild how bad some of them are. And then they lean into a lot of like musical references. Like the music is fantastic in this game. Like it's got the same composer from Nier Automata, if I'm not mistaken. And like, it's just fantastic. Every time you're just like wandering through the world, like it's just so enjoyable. And then you get to boss battles and you just get these banger tracks that just start playing and just like it's perfect for the mood. But then they have like NPCs, and I appreciate the nods. Like there's an NPC you help called Enya, and then she's dating her partner's name is Sue. So like, you know, Johnny Cash, a boy named Sue. Like they really like, you know, played up to that, which is fine. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, one of the things I will say that kind of bugged me, they use the color tan a lot in this game. It's like, it's a very tan world, which is kind of expected with the post-apocalyptic.
I think that's why I like the space station stuff later on in the game.
That was I think that was probably also has my favorite set piece from the entire game.
There's an area that's like very much another sort of like rundown post-apocalyptic city that starts as kind of a reskin of a previous area. But later on, and this is in some of the marketing, so I'm not spoiling anything. You're next to a bunch of like dilapidated amusement park stuff, and you're like jumping on old roller coaster pieces and like, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog sliding on them, and it's fun as hell. Like and that's it. Like there's a couple of moments where like they, and like when you collect a can in the game, like she holds it up to the camera, like there's a side character who gets like really excited about something and then like an embarrassing way, and then just holds for a beat and goes kind of like,
and like there's
moments of personality really shine through. You can tell that there's like some humor that they're going for here, and when it works, it really works. I wanted more of it. You know, I feel like one of those guys on Chopped where I'm like, I can taste the cilantro. It's not pronounced enough. I only got one shrimp.
Yeah. That's,
like I just wanted a little more of it.
That was kind of the thing that I guess rubbed me the wrong way about it, is it's for the most part pretty serious. And I know a lot of people like that, but the fact that it's also incredibly stylized and like over the top in other areas, like, she's doing an orbital drop wearing like a little necktie. That's absurd. That's fine. There's plenty of stuff that's very stylized and also absurd, but I appreciate, like, you know, compare this with something like Bayonetta, which is just, just oozes style, and it's completely like bombastic and just, you know, it's exaggerated. And you look at something like, you know, Final Fantasy VII, which is again, all over the place, but somehow it feels like it sort of tonally fits together. This feels in so many areas, it feels so close, but not quite, you know, and I it's one of those things where like, had it been, you know, completely just, you know, bland and gray and brown and entirely self-serious, it almost would have been sort of easier to digest because it's cohesive in that sense. But in this case, it's like it has these little glimmers of humor or personality that just kind of, they stick out. You know, they seem like, you know, which way are you going here?
Yeah, I think
pick a lane.
I hope they ramp that stuff up a little bit in the sequel too.
I think my big thing is that the stuff that Eve does in this game is very cool. Like when she's like, you know, throwing her sword up in the air, leaping up to catch it, and then plunging it down into a, you know, boss's head and then ripping it in half. Like, that's cool. It's stuff that Dante would do, that Bayonetta would do. But Eve herself is not a cool character. It's like there's this dissonance between what Eve is doing and what Eve the character is actually like. Dante. Like, Dante's a cool character. He can do stuff that's, you know, outlandishly cool for no reason, and you'll just be like, "Oh, Dante's just being Dante." Oh, Bayonetta's just being Bayonetta. With Eve, it's like, it just doesn't feel right because there's no basis of it in her actual actions in the story.
Yeah, she's beautiful and stylish as hell, and it's so much fun to control her and run around and do stuff, but like there's not a lot of depth in terms of like character there outside of like just a weapon for combat, which functions as is, right? Like, it totally works and it's totally fine, totally fine in combat sequences. But every time you're like, oh, there's a story here. Like at one point I unlocked bunny ears for my drone, right? And your drone is your thing that flies around the whole game, which you can then attach to your arm. And it's like, you get, there's glimpses, right? Like the light peeks through a little bit in terms of like charm and personality in building all that out. That's the kind of stuff I want them to go harder on in the sequel. I want them to get a little crazier with it, a little sillier with it, give her a little more depth of personality and more like cool stuff to say and do, like catchphrases, like stuff that just sort of like helps build out some of the most iconic video game characters out there. Cause I think like looks wise, style wise, she's there. She's already there.
No, this is a gorgeous, well-presented, you know, very polished, fun to play game. And it's, you know, I think a strong start if this becomes a franchise. We're about at time here, but I want to kind of get everyone's final thoughts on Stellar Blade. Jada?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic action game. Anytime you're in the action, it's enjoyable as all hell. I think, you know, you do get a little bit of more depth from Eve when you do some of the side quests. It's very specific ones where you see a little bit more character and emotion pulled out of her, but it's still so toned down that it's like, it's very easy to overlook. So I think, you know, like we were saying in those last points, it's something to go over, but, it's definitely one I still recommend for fans of action games. And I hope New Game Plus gets here sooner rather than later. Because I feel like anybody who like like me that powers through it in like a weekend and a half, like is going to gonna move on and not want to come back like too soon. So yeah.
Cool. Brian, what about you?
So I would say if you're all in on this game, buy it at launch and enjoy it. I think the experience is occasionally frustrating, but like so much of it is worth playing right now. If you're on the fence, wait a little bit to see if like it gets a couple of quality of life patches or just a couple of little tweaks here and there. Cause it's like, there's a lot of things like we talked about today that are just like almost there or just not there enough that could easily be fixed with like a couple of flipping of the switches. And so maybe wait and see on that. But yeah, if you want like a really, really awesome action game right now and you're okay with putting up with the rest, then yeah, play this game.
Nice. And now, Mitchell, you've got a whole review putting your thoughts down there. But is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. You know, I kind of gave my general overview thoughts at the top, and then Jada and Brian kind of filled it out just now. But yeah, I just want to emphasize 7 means that it's good.
It's good.
It is a good score.
It's a good game.
It says it right on the verdict screen. So, you know,
I torches and the pitchforks. It's a nice thing to say about a game.
If someone says, have a good day,
they're not mugging you.
Don't try to kill them.
Anyway, yeah, I had a good time with all of you today.
Me too.
It wasn't great.
How dare you?
Oh,
Max.
Wow. Okay.
How dare
7
you?
7 out of 10 time out.
Well,
seven.
I have to say good day to all of you. We got to wrap this up. Thank you all for joining me. Mitchell, thank you so much for powering through not just a difficult action game, but also a rough night's sleep as a dad of a young child. And thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. And we'll be back here next week with lots more. Thanks for joining us. Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Attention, fans of fairy tales that are magical, hilarious, and grim. The award-winning Pinna original podcast Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest has new episodes out now. While you've probably heard of the Brothers Grimm, you've never heard these tales told in quite this way. I'm Adam Gidwitz, best-selling and Newbery Honor author of books for children, and in Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest, I share the real, weird, grim fairy tales with real, weird, hilarious kids. In each episode, you not only get to hear a story, but you also get to enjoy this group guessing what'll happen next, cracking jokes, and sharing their own perspectives on the tales. Also, heckling me. They love to heckle me. The episodes are rated on a scale from grim to grimmer to grimmest, so there's always a great variety of tales to explore with your family. You can listen to Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest now wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow the show so you don't miss new episodes.